This week on the show, is Netflix good for Hollywood? Is Google buying Miramax? Slingbox throws to the iPad and Warner Brothers pulls out the fangs. Right here on This Week in Media, number 212. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to This Week in Media. This is Alex. And we have a lot of the usual suspects, except one has not been on for quite some time. Now, I'll announce everybody. You're going around the horn from L.A. We've got Tim Street. Hey, Tim.
Hey, how's it going? I'm so sorry I missed you live streaming this weekend. How'd it go?
Oh, my gosh. It was so much fun. We had a live view box that we were streaming to Bitgravity. It's got six EVDO modems. And so we had this portable mixer, Data Video HS2000, and then we took some witness cameras, just some little DV cameras, and we had a red camera on a camera car on the Kelly's all-in-one truck. Which is the craziest truck. I need a truck like that. It's got a generator that can run an entire shoot, and you can put a jib arm on it, you know, and put an edit bay in the back. It's awesome.
Add a refrigerator and you're set.
I know. I bet you with a little, now that if Kelly's listening, he's probably going to add a refrigerator just for us. The other truck, the all-in-two truck, has a refrigerator. Anyway, so we were shooting from the camera car. I mean, we were streaming from the camera car. So we're driving around Santa Clarita in Southern California shooting some car plates for some training we're doing, and it was just, I was just like, I can't believe we're actually streaming live from a moving car. So we had two cameras on that one, and then the next day we were shooting in a studio and with a jib and everything else, and we had, I think, three. We had the main camera, you know, the feed from the red, as well as two witness cameras, and so it was just. You know, we're trying to get into more and more of the kind of the edited live streaming thing. And it was a huge success. So anyway, hopefully if you're listening to this and you want to know when we're going to do them, I'm afraid right now, because it's R&D, we are only like telling people about a half an hour before we know it's running. So it's like, you know, we're still trying to figure it all out. We'll get into a better schedule, but the best thing to do is follow Pixelcore on Twitter or follow me on Twitter. And I usually announce it going, hey, we're turning the thing on. And we'll usually give people a little bit of warning. We're not doing one next week. So anyway, thanks for asking. And Lon, are you in Florida now?
No, I'm still in Connecticut. We've had another delay with the space shuttle, which I was invited to go see launch. So we're hoping now maybe later this month or perhaps in February, depending on what the circumstances are.
Well, I just want to know, I'm rooting for February because that gives me enough time to figure out some way to weasel my way down there.
That'd be great. We could go shoot together. The live stream. That'd be kind of fun. That'd be really cool.
We could do that.
We could try to make it happen. We'll see.
Maybe you know some people now.
I do now. So maybe we'll see what happens.
See if I can wedge my way in there. So
we'll give it a shot.
Now, also on the show today is, now, if you're a new listener or a newer listener, this will be a new name for you. If you listen to Twim from the golden early days of Twim talkery, you will remember Emery Wells coming in from New York. Hey, Emery.
Some would say the best days of Twim. Actually, it's great to be back. Thank you. I'm in New York still, and I'm excited to be back on the show.
Yeah, the Emery. So for those of you who are new, Emery, it was, really when we started, it was really myself, Emery, Scott Brooke, and was there anybody else that was? There was like the three of us and a couple, you know, and then we had, you know, Kenji.
Kenji was on a lot.
But I think it was the three
Ben,
of us.
Ben Durbin was on a lot. Yeah, the three of us were probably the main guys in the beginning.
And in the very, very beginning. And then Kenji was on a fair bit and Ben. And so anyway, so it's we got one of the old fogies back. And we're a lot more business oriented than when Emery last left. So we'll
I've noticed
we're,
that.
We're
I
testing
was catching up on some of the shows, and I noticed that you guys are much more focused on the business and distribution. We kind of were all over the place back then.
Yeah, we were like, well, let's talk about business, and now let's talk about the red. So first up, we've got Netflix one of the things we've been talking about Netflix a lot lately because they're making a lot of moves right now. So they have now, of course, gone to a subscription only plan. I think we might have touched on this last week. And but for, you know, you can still get, you know, they're making it a little bit more expensive to get DVDs, but less expensive because now you can just get an unlimited download for $7.99 a month, which seems just insanely low to me. And you know, and you don't have to get any discs at all. Now, one of the other things that they started showing with Netflix is that they, and this is according to the New York Times, and one of the things that they started talking about, they have 16 million subscribers, and the amount of money that they're spending has dropped, you know, dramatically. We'll talk, you know, a little bit about this is related to it, but they had $115 million in streaming rights in the third quarter. That's up $10 million from a year earlier. During the same time, their spending on DVDs fell by 35% to under $30 million. So they're spending a lot less on CDs than they are on streaming. Now, so the first question I have for I think all of you, I assume all of us have Netflix. Is that right? Does anyone not have Netflix? No, I didn't think so. So when was the last time you actually had a disc delivered to your house, Lon?
About a month ago, and it's still
I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of you. Emery, when was the last time you had one delivered to you?
Well, I'm going to make a confession that I actually just signed up for Netflix on Sunday. Never had Netflix before, and I am, you know, to me, ordering discs through the mail just was, it's not, I mean, I had a million other options before Netflix where I could watch content on demand. I had an old Apple TV, I have a new Apple TV, I was watching stuff online, I was watching stuff, even, you know, a lot of people forget that the cable providers have a pretty good library of content that's on, you know, for their built-in on-demand services. Right. So for me, I wasn't interested in ordering stuff via the mail. I'm just such a, like a, you know, when I watch a movie, I haven't pre-planned it. And I know that's the whole idea of the queue and everything else. But for me, the on-demand $7.99 service, and I just got the new Apple TV. So it was a no-brainer to sign up.
So you've jumped onto the bandwagon.
Jumped on to the bandwagon.
So you're doing the $7.99 a month.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah, perfect. And Tim, when was the last time you got a disc?
Well, I get discs quite regularly because I like some things that I can't get on the Netflix streaming, like Entourage. I'm getting caught up on my Entourage and Mad Men. I got caught up on Mad Men. So those are like my two discs that come flying in on Netflix. But I cut my cable this morning.
Oh, did you use a knife or scissors?
Both.
Wow.
Both, actually.
Very
yeah.
impressive.
It's not easy to do that. They try to keep you on the phone and try to talk you into it left and right to keeping it. But gone.
Yeah, I heard Leo talking about this on a twit a couple weeks ago. And I went back to Netflix because I was like, you know, I don't remember the last time I got a disc. And I went back and I realized that I had not ordered a disc since April of 2009.
Wow.
And I was still, and then I was mad because I realized I'd been paying for three discs a month, and you know, and just happy with my, you know, my streaming, my free streaming service, and so yeah, as soon as they started doing the streaming, I think I kind of went down that path and just never looked back up again. The idea of dealing with plastic just seems insane. Now, here's the question, Tim: is this good for Hollywood? Is the fact that there's a subscription service? I mean, because one of the things about this is, of course, is that you have a situation where, of course, they're making less money on DVDs, but if you look at how much money they're making on selling DVDs to Netflix versus the rights, it seems like Hollywood's making a lot more money on this. And people aren't owning the content, which means they're going to go up there and they're going to keep on getting their little royalties every time people are, you know, downloading those videos. Is this good for Hollywood or bad for Hollywood?
I think it's good for some of Hollywood and bad for other parts of Hollywood. It really depends on who's current business is going to be cannibalized the most. You know, unfortunately, everyone's in the same boat where they've got to cannibalize their own business, or somebody else like Netflix is going to do it for them. So it'll be interesting to see how it works out, and if Hollywood comes up with a competitor for Netflix, or if they buy Netflix. But there's other issues on the table, too. I mean, there's a story that just came out overnight about Comcast setting up an online toll booth to charge for Net Video at level 3, or at least that's what CDN level 3 scene. So it looks like the net neutrality issue is back on top. So if CDNs have to pay more to get it to your house, they're going to be charging Netflix more to deliver it. And Netflix hasn't commented on this story yet, to my knowledge. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, because they're going to have to raise their prices to consumers if Level 3 raises their prices to Netflix.
Well, is this, in some ways, isn't this a bit like, Lon, isn't this a bit like a VAT, where that, you know, maybe we're paying less, you know, we're not paying for a cable anymore, but the cable companies are finally figuring out how they're going to make sure that they still got a piece of the pie. And like we see in Europe, where you have a value-added tax, where the tax happens before it reaches the consumer, in some ways, everything goes up a little bit, but we, you know, even though we think we're paying, you know, we're not paying for an item, we're paying more for everything else.
Yeah, I have full faith that our corporate friends will find every way to extract every dollar out of us for the ongoing future. I see what's happening here with just Tim's example, and I'm about to do the same thing, where I'm going to be shifting my entertainment dollars. I'm not using as much cable. I'm using more Netflix. So I could see myself maybe renting more movies on iTunes, perhaps, and spending less on cable, or maybe buying the shows that I'm currently, you know, watching on cable for a lot more money. So I'm confident that we'll still be paying the same amount of money somewhere for all this stuff. But one thing that I've been playing with a little bit is I have a Blu-ray player and I have a nice sound system. So the one thing that Netflix can't deliver over streaming that cable and iTunes and Blu-ray do is great picture and great sound. And as you know, Netflix isn't currently doing the Dolby Digital Audio, and I think that's, for me, a big deal breaker. And I've been playing more and more with this Redbox thing that's around the corner from me, and it's pretty cool. $1.50 a night for a Blu-ray, and it's almost a better deal than Netflix. So,
but here's the question about that. Here's the question: is there enough people that care about that? I mean, I care about a lot of, you know, image quality and so on and so forth, but I find that there is this situation. You know, MP3s are a dramatic drop in quality from a CD, which is a drop in quality from an album. And right. Each one of them became more popular because most people don't care.
Right. And I think you're right about that. But there is always that niche market. You know,
yeah,
I had
absolutely.
A LaserDisc player. You know, I was a big LaserDisc guy. I was spending $40 a movie back in the early 90s. So I think that market will still be there. I quite honestly wouldn't mind if the streaming thing just doesn't get to where I want it to go. You know, maybe doing something with a service that's only renting Blu-rays that caters to a higher end audience or something like that. I mean,
maybe going further and getting even higher quality versions, because for me, I think the problem that I have is that I'm used to sitting on set. I was sitting on set a week ago, you know, with a stereo output of two F23s. And, you know, what I was left with looking at it, I was like, everyone would have 3D if they could see what I'm seeing. it looks gorgeous. But the issue is that it is a, it is uncompressed. It's at full quality. Everything's synced up. Nothing's been messed with yet. And it just pops right out and it looks really smooth. And to me, the problem that I have is that the reason I don't really care between Blu-ray and Netflix is because I think it all looks like mud. You know, and that's the, you know, that's the problem I have. Now, Emery, what do you think as far as the, are you going to stick with, are you fine with the streaming, or do you want the higher quality Blu-ray?
I'm fine with the streaming. I think that you bring up a good point about quality, because, you know, for those of us that sit in, you know, multi-hundred-thousand-dollar editing suites or finishing suites, and we can see what, you know, the best quality video can look like on expensive monitors, calibrated displays, really great sounding audio systems. That's really the only time that I really truly appreciate the difference. Even when I see our work that we do here at my company, Katabatic, when I see it on broadcast, I mean, it's obviously it's often very disappointing. And you know, with streaming, I think we actually have an opportunity to be better than broadcast. And you know, like Fios, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, they announced that they've upped their top tier file service to 150 megabits down. It's absolutely, absolutely inevitable that streaming will surpass broadcast, I think.
Well, when you look at Blu-ray, I mean, it's 35 megabits a second. You know, I mean, that's what Blu-ray is. And so we're already, I mean, if you have a connection, now the problem is you have to have a solid connection to do this. But if you had a connection of 50 megabits a second, you've got a little headroom and the ability to, you know, if you buffer a little bit at the beginning, you have enough to stream Blu-ray quality, theoretically. Now, this gets into that what we were talking about earlier, which is, you know, how much are the CDNs going to pay to move a, you know, 30 gig file?
That's probably why Comcast is so upset about Netflix right now. That biggest nightmare.
Now, here's the question is, can anyone catch up with Netflix?
I think people can. I mean, I don't think Netflix is – although Netflix is the player today, I don't think that this market has been figured out. I don't think that – you know, they're still struggling with their streaming deals with the studios. And that's – you know, the studios, they're going to struggle and kind of, you know, kick and drag their feet for as long as they can, because they need to – it's – you know, they need to maintain some kind of – control. It's not just about Netflix, but it's about their position with every other content distributor. It's about their position with iTunes and with everybody else. If they provide an all-in-one streaming deal for Netflix, they're negotiating, their negotiating place with other companies isn't as strong. I mean, obviously, they're not inclined to, or they're not obligated to provide the same deal to any other company. But by holding on to the streaming rights for new releases, it gives them the ability to still dictate some power over these people, because once they give it all up, they've kind of given it all up, and they're pretty much in the hands of Netflix or iTunes or anybody else. So, I mean, I can understand their perspective, but obviously it's just a matter of time before it fully kicks over, and it will fully kick over. So,
well, and this comes to our next story, that is, here comes some competition, where we have Google is rumored to be looking at buying the digital rights for the entire Miramax back catalog. Now, there's a deal right now. Part of this is that it's quiet because Farmyard, this is according to Techland, Farmyard Holdings is still in the process of getting closing the sale of Miramax from Disney. But it looks like they may just pass it right on to Google. Now, Google, you know, by owning 700 movies, the rumor is that they may be streaming these through YouTube, which we know now is capable of 4K. So they could be streaming this really full resolution, but definitely at HD.
Have you ever watched a 4K video on YouTube?
I've made one. If you go up there, if you actually go up, there's a Mac break that we did as a test with Sal Segoyan that is 4K. And so
it's nearly impossible to play.
No, ours plays really well. It actually plays. You go up and try it. You can't. The problem is you can't find a screen.
I've tried. I've tried.
Well, ours works well because. Ours works well because of the way we compress MacBreak, it was still only like 300 or 400 megs, so it actually worked out really well. The problem is, of course, finding a screen that is big enough to play it. You know, so but anyway, 1920x1080 would be great if they do it, or even 720p. Now the question here is, so Google is obviously, if they're doing this, they're pretty darn serious about moving that, getting that programming really moving down that path. Can Google really push at Tim? Can they really push at Netflix? Does YouTube have the ability to make that happen?
Well, if you look at what they've done in the past, they give it away for free and make ads available next to it. So that's hard for Netflix to compete with right now.
Now, the question is, can they get everybody else on board to do that? I guess with enough money, you can get anybody on board. Lon, do you think that there's a possible culture clash? I mean, most of the people who use YouTube still are into more of the edgier, amateur kind of production. Can you get big films to be successful? Will people sit there and watch a two-hour film on YouTube?
As I was hearing you discuss this, I was thinking, if I can't watch it on my television, then it's not going to work. And the one thing that Netflix has done very successfully is got their software onto every box that's connected to a television. You know, there's probably an infinite number of devices now that are out there. I think beyond just Google TV, if there's an Xbox client, if there's some way, perhaps if the Apple TV supports apps in the future, if that comes about, that might make it work. And it could be something where people go to the service that has the movie that they want to watch. And, you know, it's starting now already, but perhaps that might be where it ends up. But until you can get it on a TV, I don't think it's going to get too far.
Now, Emery, do you think, as we look at this, I mean, they're buying back catalog right now. They're licensing a lot of this stuff. When do we get to a point, when you start talking about spending $115 million, when do you start getting to a point where some of these providers start funding their own films?
Like Google? or Amazon, as they
like Amazon. Yeah, I mean,
yeah, I would think it would be a surprise to me if Google started funding their own films. It was, you know, the Amazon thing was a surprise to me. I don't think it's their core business. I don't think it's what they understand. I think that they need to stick to what they understand. So, I would think that would be a mistake. But, you know, speaking of YouTube on the television, you know, the thing is that YouTube already is all over all sorts of devices that are connected to televisions. But people don't think of YouTube in that way. They think of YouTube as a website that you view on a computer. YouTube is on – it was on the original Apple TV. It's on the new Apple TV. It's on the Boxy Box. So there's a lot of devices you can connect to watch HD quality YouTube videos. I just don't think people are thinking about it in that way right now. And that's, you know, that's a fairly easy thing for them to solve if they went and bought this back catalog and marketed watching it on a big screen. But it's, you know, it's just that it's just being not marketed that way right now.
So we'll see if they go down the film route. I mean, I would love to see more competition. I have to admit that I'm in my little shell of Netflix, and I'm looking at getting the new Apple TV. I put it off. I was like, because I was mad that there weren't any more apps.
I would get a Boxy Box. You know, I got the new Apple TV, and it's really it's pretty underwhelming.
You know, for me, the big selling point now is with the new iPad interconnection between the iPad and my Apple TV. I kind of want to be able to just pass stuff on to a larger screen. You know, that's
it. It's so cool, and I, when I saw them doing that in Avatar, and then a few months later it was going to be available essentially on my Apple TV, I was incredibly excited. But I think that's somewhat novelty. You know, it is a cool thing. I don't know how much I'm actually going to use it. The streaming quality of the Apple TV versus the Netflix streaming, because I don't know why, but Netflix movies play infinitely better than. They start faster and they actually look a little bit better, I think, than the Apple TV movies. It's a pretty underwhelming device. You know, I think I haven't used the Boxy Box, but it looks like a much more interesting.
The worst part is that I'm a geek in a lot of places, and watching usually by the time I am sitting down to watch something on TV, you know, I've got a Manhattan in my hand. I don't really want to think about anything. You know, and I have to admit that my Roku is about as complicated as I want my TV to become. You know, and I've noticed that for me, a lot of these other boxes, whether it's, you know, Apple TV and Roku, I mean, the fact that I have to use multiple controllers drives me absolutely crazy. You know, I just want to run everything off my iPhone and my iPad and be able to watch it. You know, I don't want to learn a new device. And so I think that's been the real holdup for me with boxing. Is,
well, you know, the new interface, it looks a lot simpler. It's not the old Boxy that was available as a software app for your computer. The one that's in Boxy Box, the new interface, it looks much more streamlined. It'll be right. Interesting to see what the Netflix app in Boxy is like. The one in Apple TV is it's a little weak. I mean, the streaming is good. It plays immediately, whereas movies that I rent from Apple TV seem to take longer to buffer. Searching or browsing, it's not searching. Search in the Apple TV Netflix app, but browsing is pretty limited, and it's kind of a nice way to, you know, discover movies.
Very good. Also in the news, this is coming in from Canada, from CTV.ca. So CTV, of course, is the MTV. You know, in many ways, the MTV, much MTV group in Canada, and they would like to cut down the channel's music videos from 50% of its schedule to 25%. And, you know, that of course they've been shot down. Now, here's the reason is that this is a little bit different than what we have in the United States. This was shot down by regulators in Canada, partially because CTV already has or MTV Canada, which is owned by CTV, already has they're basically protected. Other people can't go into that space because they're in the music video space. And so Rogers and others have said, well, you know, they're being protected, and as a result, they shouldn't be able to, start digging into our audience as well. And so that's been a lot of that process. Now, the question really is, from a business perspective, I mean, we've seen music videos now all over the place. I mean, you can get them on YouTube. There's, you've got a couple couple, record companies have gotten into the business themselves. There's, you can see them everywhere. Is there a business model for having a TV network anymore that is really useful for videos?
Well, you look at what Vevo is doing, and you know the model that they have is they're giving away the music video. There's advertising attached to it, and if you like the song, you can buy it on iTunes. And I think that's a pretty strong model, and I think that either CTV or MTV should be looking really hard at buying Vevo if it's up for sale. I think it's partially funded by Google and Abu Dhabi. So I don't know if they can get their hands on it. But that seems to be, you know, super serving the niche. It's about giving people who love music and love music videos what they want, and not so much serving the advertiser.
Is there a Vevo app for the iPad or iPhone?
No, there's a Vevo app for the iPhone, and they're working on a Vevo app for the iPad, but they're having some troubles, I think.
Mm-hmm. But it's also all on YouTube.
Getting it through the store.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for me, you know, I don't know if I'd really want to sit in front of YouTube. I mean, I have to admit that when I watch media, most of the time is on my iPad or my iPhone at this point. You know, it's when I'm standing somewhere or I'm waiting for something, and being able to, you know, watch these, you know, I used to watch lots of music videos. I used to dream about making them before they became no business. I'd love the idea of making them just for fun, but I don't think there's a lot, you know, the budgets are not what they used to be. But the, but you know, it does seem like one of those things. Emery, do you watch music videos anymore?
I don't on television. I don't know where to find them on television. I was actually surprised to read this story because I didn't know that you could regulate the genre of content.
And in Canada. You can do it in Canada, not here.
Yeah, I was right. So that was news to me. And that's pretty shocking. I mean, it seems odd. Why is there so much regulation over the genre of content?
Well, I think the idea was, I mean, it's a smaller market than the United States. And I think that the idea is to provide some ways of making sure that if people made investments, they could take advantage of those investments, because it's just not, you know, the Wild Wild West wouldn't work as well and people wouldn't go into certain genres. One of the things that Canada does a lot is there's a lot of regulation around how much local content that you produce, which I think is great. I mean, it actually has. I really saw it. I was on Leo's shows in various forms, whether it's Call for Help or The Lab with Leo, shooting in both Toronto and Vancouver. And those shows, in a lot of ways, were funded because there's a requirement to create local content, and you know, and hire local people and make sure that there's a local voice going on. Otherwise, Canada would risk what a lot of other countries risk, which is losing. Losing a lot of local production because, you know, people just, you know, the production value of, we don't really see it. If you don't leave the country, if you don't leave the United States, you don't realize that the production value of U.S. Shows is really high. And even though we can complain about it here and there. And for me, the big thing is quality of light and quality of sound are the two things that you just are outrage, you know, just head and shoulders over everything else. And so it's very, very hard to compete with that without a little bit of a protective measure. And so Canada did that to make sure that their culture was protected. And what's great about it is you look at Rogers and they have Indian shows and they have Russian shows and they have all this other part of their requirement. They just fulfill all these other needs so that if you're an individual user, there's all kinds of things you can do. So I think that it makes sense in some ways to kind of protect those areas. I think this one is a weird one to protect, but I think it's part of a larger program that I think is actually working pretty well for Canada.
But that first part makes sense. I mean, having local production and local talent, that all makes sense. But regulating the genre of content that those local producers create or distribute, that...
Well, I don't think it's like everyone sits under it. I think people can apply. You know, like, no one's doing this. I want to do it. If I do it, can I have, you know, can I be the only one doing that? You know, so that there's not two Russian channels or two whatever channels. Because the problem is if you had two of them, that neither of them would survive. I mean, I think that's the challenge there. And what we ought to do is get someone from Canadian TV on the show. So we'll start kicking that around. We've got some contacts up there. So we'll start kicking it around, see if we can't have anyone talk about it that knows more than we do. Because we're kind of looking outside, looking in. But I'll see if we can get someone on a future show, and we'll talk to them more about it. We'll make a section of the show just about Canadian regulation, and learn all about it. Now, speaking of, were you going to say something, Lon?
No, I was just going to say that the one thing did pop to mind is that do the record labels need the networks anymore to distribute this content?
Well, here's the I think the bigger question is do retailers need TV broadcasters? I mean, they do now, but as we look at this, I mean, I think that the big looming thing that we get into is when I'm always surprised. I mean, we're seeing Amazon start to make movies, but I'm always surprised that Amazon doesn't build a network about stuff. you know, it's kind of like, you know, why, you know, when you look at the success of this stuff, and maybe they are, maybe there's some black ops back there putting that stuff together, but the, you know, not, you know, like, but they could do a lot of these consumer driven shows that you would see, maybe it would be politically complicated for them to do, but it just seems like a lot of these big box online retailers and other people, you know, I to me it seems like that's where I would be starting to put more and more of my dollars as an advertiser instead of into advertising, into actual content.
Go direct. I mean, we're actually doing that now for some local folks around Connecticut, where we're actually producing newscasts for commercial entities so they can go directly to their clientele on Facebook and other places. They realize it's better to spend the money on an internal production than it is to go and try to convince some network to go carry a video news release or something like that. So,
I mean, I can run a 30-second ad on Super Bowl, or I can fund a year of really, really good content. You know, about whatever it is. And it could be, you know, whether it's, you know, the Gap could be doing fashion shows, and BMW could just talk about how they design cars, and the people likely to buy their cars would probably go watch it more so than it's not an either or kind of thing, but it just seems like, I think that's the real danger for a lot of broadcasters, is that as this opens up and we don't have to, you know, and anybody can get that broadcasting out there. And especially if you look at the price of cameras and everything else, it just seems like you could really, you know, that wall continues to crumble. We talk about it a lot on the show. We've been talking about it since the show started. But it seems like it's getting much, much closer to that reality.
Hey, Alex, just to briefly answer the question about whether broadcasters are needed, the short answer is no. If you go to YouTube and look at the most viewed videos, they're pretty much all music videos, the top being Justin Bieber at 398 million views.
Wow.
Followed by Beyonce, 312 million views, and Shakira at 247 million views, and it goes down. But I mean, it's pretty incredible when you look at the, you know, the all time most viewed videos on YouTube, and they're predominantly music videos.
Yeah, that seems to be the place. I know that's where my kids go to watch music videos. So speaking of watching stuff on your portable device, one of the things that we're seeing now, Sling Media had an iPhone app, but now they have released the new iPad app. So this is going to allow you to sling your media from your house to your iPad at all the full resolution goodness, rather than just doubling up the iPhone version. And now you're going to have a Sling box. It's going to cost you, I don't know, $200 or $300. And this is the Sling. I don't know how much the Sling Player Mobile costs. I have this is in the Inquirer, is where I got the news, and it says, you know, £18, which would be about $25. I don't know if that's the case here, but you know, I have to admit, this is the only time I feel like I need cable, and the only time I'm really interested in the Sling box, because I usually just time shift everything against, you know, with Netflix and everything else, is, you know, during Steeler football, which I'm a huge, as many people know listening, I'm a huge Steeler fan. And there's a lot of times when I can't watch the Steelers because I'm not in front of a TV on Sunday. And being able to sling sports, you know, for me is the big thing. Do some of us own Sling players? I mean, Tim, you own one, right? Don't you?
No, Slingbox came out, I thought, what a great idea. This is really, really cool. And then I started paying attention to my habits. And when I'm away from home, mm-hmm. I'm at cocktail parties, I'm at events. I don't have time in a hotel room to watch anything from home because I'm just sleeping.
Right.
I have one. I got the original one. And I used to sling to my lousy Windows mobile phone like 5 or 6 years ago, whenever it first came out. And I was just showing people that, look what you can do. I wasn't actually watching anything.
Right.
It was like, look how cool this is. But it didn't really accomplish anything. And the app for the iPad is $30.
Oh, $30. Okay. So, now,
I'm with you on that one. I have a Sling box as well. I had the original one, and I first used it on my Moto Q, and it was really just exactly that. It was a technology demo. I'd show people like, look how cool this is. And I would never watch it. because the quality was so bad, and it was you know, choppy and slow, and it drained my battery on my Moto Q in about 5 minutes. But I'm a big fan of the Slingbox. I think it's a cool device. And the thing about, you know, for you, Alex, if you got a Slingbox, not only does it sling your live television, but it'll sling anything that you've recorded to your DVR. So if you set the game to record,
right,
and maybe you're not near the TV, you can start watching it an hour after it started wherever you are on your iPad or your iPhone. So I'm a big fan of the Slingbox. I don't use it a lot, I'll be honest, you know, but it's fun to have when you in the rare instance when you do watch it.
Speaking of iPads, there's rumors bubbling up again that the iPad 2 is going into production. It's not too far away. Rumors are, this is according to E-Commerce Journal, the rumors are that you're going to see video calling, of course, two cameras. I think we kind of all expect that. A new display and touch technology, which I'd be kind of, you know, it'd be nice to see a little slightly higher res. They're not going to go to a Retina display on an iPad, I don't think. And most importantly to me, USB port to connect easily to other devices. Now, I'm going to start with you, Emery. Do you think this is a viable rumor?
I think it's a pretty sure thing. I mean, it's sort of an expected thing. I don't know how soon. I think that we're hearing January, February, Macworld time. And yeah, I mean, there's nothing crazy about those specs. It's kind of everything we'd expect.
The only thing I was interested in is the USB port. That's the only thing that seems a little weird. Like, why would you do that? Why would you not go through the controller? You know, like go through the standard setup. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I thought as well when I read that. They could enable USB through the 30-pin for any like regular USB connection. I mean, I guess is it for plug? I mean, what would you plug in? I guess.
Well, I can think of a lot of things to plug into the iPhone, and I think that one of the big problems with the iPad and iPhone, and one of the reasons that I look at possibly developing stuff for the Android, is specifically because I don't want to go through Apple's craziness to get something approved to be able to hook it to cameras and be able to hook it to other things. Like, I just kind of, maybe the USB port would be another way to access. Have applications access a port.
But I think they would. I'm sure they would still make you go through the same hoops.
Probably, but that's the thing for me that you know, people getting their apps turned down. None of that bothers me, but not being able to connect hardware to my app, my. I think that's really going to hold in the long term. Could really hold back the iPhone and iPad because, you know, I think that there's an opportunity to make this a real interface to the rest of our, you know, all of our other items, and there are things that Bluetooth just doesn't. You know, and Bluetooth, by the way, if you use Bluetooth, I found out, also have to go through licensing with Apple. So the only way, if you see Wi-Fi is the only thing you can actually use to interface something with your iPad without having to get Apple's blessing. And Tim, do you see Apple allowing that much control, or letting go of any of the control?
No, not at all. And I don't see, I'd be so shocked if there is a USB port added to the iPad, because it's such an elegant device. And to me, it would be that there would be, you know, the 30 pin would go away and it would just be wireless charging or something, you know, it just doesn't make sense.
Right. Lon, do you think it's going to come before? I mean, what we would typically expect is a 1-year curve, so them announcing it end of March. Do you think it'll happen earlier than that?
I don't think so. I think they've been pretty good about doing a 1-year curve on the iPhone, and this thing's selling like hotcakes. If they even give a hint that there's something new on the horizon, it might hurt sales. And part of me's thinking, when I hear of all these iPad rumors start to creep up, that perhaps these are some competitors trying to slow down the momentum a little bit, get people thinking about, well, geez, do I really want to buy it now, knowing there's going to be something new in a few months? So I don't know, but I not sure what more they can really improve upon beyond performance and display capability and maybe a camera, but I'm very happy with it. I'll probably just buy whatever they come out with anyhow.
We drank a whole pot of the Kool-Aid and we are ready for assimilation. So
that's right.
Well, I'll tell you what I think. Why I think it might be before March is just because it might coincide with a Verizon iPhone launch, and it might do an iPad, you know, 3G Verizon model as well. And, you know, otherwise, yeah, I think the 1-year cycle would be normal. I'll tell you what I want is I want them to get rid of that like 1-inch bezel around the whole damn thing. When it first came out, that was my biggest disappointment. Isn't the 1-inch bezel, doesn't it look like it's way too big? I want to see like a screen, you know, the screen go edge to edge.
I don't know what that requirement is. I kind of like it because when I put it into my different cases that I have for it, I know that there's a little bit of buffer you know, going around the cases. And so that's the only reason that it would bother me if it went out. I mean, I think they could reduce it, but I think that for me, you know, I would love for it to be 1 inch thinner, because there's a lot of pockets that I have that it would fit into if it was just 1 inch thinner. So cutting a half inch off of each side would be really nice. You were going to say something, Lon?
Yeah, I had the same reaction when I first saw the bezel when it was announced. And having it, it's actually nice that you have a spot to put your thumb and not interfere with the screen and still get that entire view of the screen without blocking anything. But it would be kind of cool to see if they could develop some intelligence, perhaps, to make it look a little bit sleeker without getting tripped up by a thumb being just held to it, which would be kind of neat. The other thing I was thinking about, I'm starting to do presentations with the iPad using Keynote, because my presentations tend to be very simple. I like to have people focus on me and not on my technology. And being able to do like an AirPlay with a Keynote presentation would be really cool to a projector or something, because that is just having all the less wires to bring to a presentation would be a great thing for me.
Yeah, and one other thing, the weight. It's a little bit heavy to hold.
It is heavy.
my mother-in-law over the weekend, as you picked it up, my son has I got one of the first 3G, or I got one of the first Wi-Fi ones, and then I bought a 3G one. And my son, who's three, has the Wi-Fi one. And my mother-in-law picked it up. She goes, "This is really heavy." And she goes, "This must be expensive." And I, you know, and then she thought I was a little foolish for giving a three-year-old an iPad, but you know, I said it's fine as long as he doesn't stand on it, which he does every once in a while. So so far I'm surprised, by the way, at how durable an iPad is, given, you know, it gets pretty much wear and tear during the, you know, during the evenings with my son, and I'm surprised that it's still around. So anyway, also in the news, Josh Whedon is not, he's a little bit bummed here. It looks like that we're going to see another Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but he's not going to be at the helm. So this is according to E! Online. And you know, so it looks like, you know, they're rewriting it. They're doing a typical reboot, but they're leaving the creator out of the whole mix. Tim, what's going on here?
You know, I worked on the launch campaign for Buffy the Vampire Slayer at the WB, and the marketing execs at the WB originally just wanted to call it Slayer. They wanted to drop the whole thing, and Josh, you know, he stood up for it and he fought for it, and they kept the title. I'm surprised, you know, that he wasn't able to do this. You know, he's so involved with all of his creations and makes them live on in comic book form. But, you know, what are you going to do when a studio just wants to go do something? I wonder if there were any conversations that took place that we aren't privileged to where, you know, the way it feels now is it feels like they kind of went behind his back and just did this. But I can't imagine that.
Well, he seems like he said, "I love the idea of, you know, he you know, in the quote that he had for E, it's that there's no legal grounds to do anything other than sighing audibly." What do you say, Lon?
This looks like this is what happens when you get in bed with a big Hollywood entity that you have to sell your. You know, your ownership of your idea, and at some point it goes away from you. It's same thing happened with the Terminator series that we're into what now, two or three movies now, and a TV series that had no James Cameron involvement whatsoever, and it shows to some degree.
yeah. So, Emery, do you think that this is going to is it going to work without his vision?
Well, I'm confused because it was in 1992 there was a movie that was before the series that he didn't direct the original movie in 1992. So was he the original creator of this period, or did he just direct the WB series?
I thought he was the creator.
I think he wrote the original movie, and then he was the executive producer and creator of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the television series.
Well, then it would totally make sense if he was the original creator. I wasn't sure if he was the original creator.
Yeah,
of the original movie.
He was the original writer, the original script. This is according to Wikipedia, so you know, as fast as I can Google. So.
Well, yeah, in that case, I mean, I think it's always sad when, you know, when someone that creates something isn't involved in, you know, in its future. I mean, it happens all the time. What are you going to do? I think he has the right attitude about it.
Wait till he gets a bill from Comcast for too many people watching Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog. That's when we'll have a real story.
That'll be Buffy the Cable Killer. So anyway, Tim, where can people find you?
You can check out my blog at onetombstreet.com or visit me at mdialogue.com.
Lon, where can people find you?
You find me on the Twitter at LONSEIDMAN. And my ongoing space shuttle adventure is at shuttle.localonlinenews.tv. I did a little video package on this whole tweet up philosophy and all the things that NASA's doing in social media. They actually just were recognized as the savviest government social media entity out there right now. So wow. They were doing some tremendous work, and it's kind of a neat story. It just talks about what's going on with NASA and why it's so important to get more people out there tweeting and Facebooking.
Fantastic. Definitely check that out. And also, Emery Wells, where can people find you?
People can find me on the Twitters at Emery Wells, EmeryWells, or they can check out my company website at katabatic.tv. It's KATABATIC. Hey, speaking of NASA, did you guys see that? Did you guys see they're having some kind of press conference today to discuss they found extraterrestrial life?
I had not heard that.
Yeah, there's something. I think it's tomorrow. It's going to be tomorrow. December 2nd is the date. And they're not talking yet, but there's a lot of rumors swirling around that there's apparently some evidence of some kind of photosynthesis going on Titan or some distant moon out there. So it's pretty.
I was expecting that to be that. That's why they're delaying the launch, just because someone's ship is in the way.
Right.
So we'll launch as soon as he gets that big giant landing ship out of the way. Yeah.
See, I don't care what they are as long as they don't invade us and enslave humanity.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
That doesn't happen. I'm totally cool with it.
Or use us as cattle. So anyway. All right. Thanks, guys. This mess that you've been listening to is This Week in Media. We are over and out. This Week in Media is a Pixelcore.tv production produced by Suzanne Llewellyn with technical producers John Riley and Alutha Jaminkar. Content contributor is Jason Perrier.